Benishi 2023, we're giving out best setting conceit, we're giving out best rules, best army building, best excuses to buy miniatures, the game that changed our opinion the most while reviewing, and the game we're most likely to play again.
I think you forgot game we're still thinking about.
And game we're still thinking about.
Fortified Niche.
Hey, hey, everyone. This is your host, JC Dent, here. And this is Niche Awards 2023, where we celebrate another year of podcasting about indie miniature war games and such. So that's me. And there's also my irreplaceable co-host, Casa.
Despite your best efforts to the contrary, I persist.
It's actually been a year of playing miniature games over Tabletop Simulator.
Oh God. Oh God. So long.
By the last count, we've played, we reviewed 18 games since the last Nishis. We've definitely played a few more, which just didn't make to the reviewing slate for one reason or another. Maybe they'll do it another day, but such is the life of a podcaster. I expected us to have played more than 20 games, but I really didn't account for the amount of interviews we did.
I've enjoyed our interviews. I've really enjoyed the ones you did that were super interesting to sort of hear as a second person. Shame we haven't been able to finagle a 2v1 interview. We just have to find, I don't know, someone in Eastern Europe and interview them instead of these North Americans.
Somehow it would happen that I wouldn't be available on the day. So it's been 18 games that we did, and we're going to go essentially in the same way that the show is structured. And I guess we're going to start with the best setting.
Yay!
So my nominee for best setting is Dread Knights, because it's a Victorian monster hunting PvP or PvE or PvPvE game. And I think that's fairly cool because the world hasn't ended completely. It's not, what's that game, Unhallowed Metropolis or something, that there's an RPG where everything outside London is zombies. No, it's just...
It's not as grim as, like, the Mirkburg ones were. It's more like, hey, things are bad, but you and your buddies can go beat up Dracula, so hop to it.
Things are bad for the usual Victorian reasons, and also there's Dracula. So, yeah. I
don't like the bloodstuff because they're preying on the poor, and also Dracula.
Yeah, so I enjoyed that. I enjoy that it gives us access to like late 19th century gear, so you have muskets on the lower end of things and rifles we just encountered in the Franco-Prussian game. Yeah. Eagles of Empire, I meant, but yeah. Also, so I think it's a neat setting, and I guess even as you aptly compared it, it's not as a downer as Morkborg.
Yeah, and I don't think you're with that. I think I was kind of expecting it to be more Bloodborne-y at first blush, because that's kind of like the general like joke of like Victorian horror video games of like, oh yeah, and also, you're a Bloodborne hunter, haha, because it's all anyone ever wants, which I get it, like, it's a popular series and people enjoy things. I think my best setting that I've seen this year was probably 1843, because it's just so fucking weird, and I quite like the twist that, like, the horrible, unstoppable, like, invaders are just humanity, and they're all, like, cyber nerds now, who just, like, fucking treat it as StarCraft, and, like, these other beings are living and dying and sort of striving for their lives, and the humans are just like esports.
Yeah, they're non-combined combined army in that they're conquering the universe to create more Bitcoin mines and stuff, but where a combined army is either enslaving or exterminating people, the Therians are just wiping out everything they see because, like, you know, we need more servers. And so that's interesting because it's already a game that has space USSR and space United States. So you'd think they'd be like, you know, the humanity home planet, but no, it's the weird necro droids.
It's a fun, like, goofy twist that sort of isn't as common, and it's a nice playing on, like, how to do humanity in space, essentially, rather than being like, oh, humans are like the generic guys, or they're the best at diplomacy, or they're like, I don't know, so militaristic. It's like, no, they're just fucking weird Bitcoin-obsessed Dyson sphere-building psychopaths who don't care about you at all.
Yeah, yeah. And they're not easy, and they're not winning, like, you know, this in one go. I haven't read that much into the lore of AT-43, but at least their invasion seemed to have been going a little bit worse than combined armies doing in Infinity these days.
Yeah, they're not curb stomping anyone, but you're fighting like an infinite opponent. So, like, how much can you really, like, affect it? And they're dealing with, like, galactic time scales. So, sure, you've had it for 43 years, but the Bitcoin mines are still Bitcoin mining. So, like,
I think it's sort of like the AI war setting where you're fighting against an AI that's already won and controlling the galaxy. But the thing is that, like in that game and in this game, the AI isn't that interested in, like, stomping you out immediately. Like, for example, I think in AT-43 it's just a side project for some dudes, and, like, most of humanity, most of weird humanity doesn't care about it, and it's like some guys pulling a project. So yeah. It's like, you know, you're maybe fighting a war against some termites in your garden, but your thread about using explosives and stuff hasn't caught on Twitter that day because, like, you know, the space Musk has said something stupid and that, and now everyone's talking about it.
Is busy in AI paradise. Who gives a shit about this planet on the edge of nothing? Also, like, super honorable mention to Space Station 13. Space Station Zero? which is, like, mechanically, I wasn't huge on it, but, like, the setting was sick, and, like, I quite liked the sort of positive vibe to, like, the hub sort of thing. I've been like, hey, man, it's fucked out there, but we have something cool going on here, and, like, we're all mostly friends because there's no other option. And, like, I like that. This is like, it's nice. It's nice.
Yeah, the station is trying to kill us. No need to do it for its work. Are we going to try and hash out the absolute nominee, or are we going to leave it at that?
I mean, it's probably Dreadnoughts, because I haven't read enough of AT-43 to be sure, like, my understanding of it is what it actually is. But, like, the broad strokes and setting are sick. The specifics of Dreadnoughts are very cool, so. But Dreadnoughts will have, like, a good broad stroke as well, so I'd go with that one.
Yeah, so best setting, Dreadnoughts. Wow.
Also, Dreadnoughts could also tie into Dracula's America in a very easy way, and that could be fun. You could send your cowboys over to sort of, like, help fight Victorian vampires, but also, like, going back and fighting Confederates is like, ah.
When you have the option of fighting Confederates, do it. So, moving on, our next section nomination bit is going to be best rules.
Yeah, this is a tightly fought category for me between Brent Spivey and
it's Brent versus Brent in this game of Brent combat.
So, honestly, my honorable mention straight up goes to, like, Dreadnoughts. Dreadnoughts works really well. It's a really well-written system. It's super simple, and it's clever. I'm spacing on the guy's name, so I'm going to look it up. So, what was his name? By Will Warham. It's just really good. It just works really well. But Rogue Planet has the energy system. And I love that. I love that so much. I want to put it into every game I play because it makes it feel so good. So good.
Yeah, I guess it gives you a narrative sort of control over over when your chaff or strong guys die, because, like, you know, do you keep the miniature on or do you burn energy, if I remember how it worked correctly. But that, the important thing is that you have control. At some point you run out of those points, and of course you can't keep your guys alive forever because there are critical hits. But it is a really neat system, and the way it ties into everything else in the game is also really cool.
And it's just... So, like, quick recap of how it works is you basically get certain amounts of energy for certain types of units. Like, you have light, medium, and heavy. They give you 1, 2, or 3 energy, and then you have a squad of potentially, like, that energy. But units take damage, you can spend energy to block that damage. So what you have, if you have, like, a squad HP pool rather than your units having HP, your weapons can do model damage points, and it's just so interesting because it just, you can track and see immediately how well you're doing and how well they're doing. And there's no way to recover energy except for, like, fan-ridden scenarios and stuff. So by default, it's only going down. It's only getting worse for you as you go along. And, like, sure, your boss has their 4 supporters, cheerleaders, which is also a really cool system and a really cool way to represent your boss having superpowers and, like, also losing them as your boss takes damage, like you're some sort of Mario supervillain, Mario boss. And that rules, and it's just so many just sick, cool things that sort of tie together, make this, like, simple skirmish fantasy sci-fi game.
Yeah.
It's really neat. It's just, between the energy and the boss, HP stuff, I never felt like my guys were going to be taken off the board before I was ready to make that sacrifice, or I felt like it was a worthwhile saving of those points, as opposed to, like, oh, you've rolled double sixes and my best HMG guy's dead now.
What an opening of turn one.
I would have liked him to survive. Sure, it'd be cool to have an avatar past, you know, the first ARO. And my second game would also be Technopole, because it does sports-based tabletop gameplay in a really interesting way. The card system is thick. They're also shared with Rogue Planet of Powered by Apocalypse, sort of 2d6, 7 plus is good, 10 plus is great, 6 or less is bad. Technoball is also fucking really cool. Really enjoyed that. Can't wait to play more Technoball. I need to print some guys out. So keen for Technoball.
Yeah, I've seen Casa is really excited, really excited about that ball. For my nomination, I guess for best rules, I most strongly nominate Moonstone. Because when everybody else zags the heck out of everything, it breaks all. I'm not going to say that it breaks, like, all the rules. movement isn't infinite, but it takes such a cool and I don't know if I can say it, novel approach to both, like, shooting and melee, and it feels great. Those systems are not alike in any way, and in another game, like in a dice roller, you'd be like, oh man, there's a separate thing for resolving shooting and magic and melee, oh man, that's bad. But in this game it works fantastically, because when it comes to melee, you're playing mind games against the other player, but you're also
being able to bluff, it immediately feels so much more just jerky and brutal. You don't have to lie at all,
yeah,
but you can, and it supports it rather than being like, oh, what's under my camouflage marker? Probably a chasseur, because you're Ariadna and there's nothing else point for point that makes more sense than a chasseur.
But so that's, like, you know, lying in magic and shooting, I guess. But in melee, you get to choose from an attack, and the opponent chooses from attack, and then you play them at the same time, and, you know, some attacks cancel out others. Sometimes you deal damage to each other, and sometimes your character has...
The special character attacks are so good. Yeah. It's like, oh, you thought it was a repost. It's actually a mega shuriken instead, because my character's special and a weed goblin It's like, I just died.
And that's like, I think that's the most verisimilitudinous fights have been, because fights aren't just, you know, chaotically slashing at the other guy and hoping you succeed like most games imagine it to be. It's like you're thinking about what you're doing and you're also reacting to that guy. So while adjudicating the whole reaction thing or making it be a thing in games is hard, because like if you knew what the other player was doing, you wouldn't have the time pressure to react as you do in real life. But I think this is a good...
That, like, if you're a LARPer or a Hema, historical medieval reactor, person, you get real weird ideas about how to, like, mechanicalize those things sometimes. I've noticed, I'm not always bad at these, but sort of like, when I've done the LARPing, I've read the books, I know how to do a longsword. It's like, yeah, but it's not what we're doing. Nice, so...
Yeah, as a guy who like went to saber practice for some time, I think it's a good approximation. It works. Yeah. I like the system, and like the other systems are nice to talk about, like the HP slash
Action point thing.
Yeah, HP slash action point, as you lose action points as you lose HP, but not everybody loses them in the same way, because some guys might have some fat you have to shave before they start losing action points. Others are more stacked so that they lose them more evenly. I think it's a great game.
And I quite like the every mission is like you're playing to extract resources too, and the resources aren't just sort of like walk up and run away. And sometimes just walk up and dig, dig, dig.
Yeah, the resources might not always be cooperative.
Moonstone is just so clever. So clever.
So are we going to have an agreement on this one, or are you team Spivey to the bitter end?
I'm team Spivey to the bitter end, but I will say that I think that Moonstone's just ability to deceive and ability to play those like playful mind games with your friends is just such... something you can't do. You can play Texas Hold'em against people in like Malifaux and stuff, and I feel Moonstone has a lot in common with Malifaux, but the ability to just be like, I know what you card you're holding, and then fucking nail it feels so good when you can like just cold read your opponent and just get off your secret bullshit, or you just stop lying and you keep getting free things. It feels amazing, and like,
yeah,
it's good.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why I need to Moonstone. I really need it.
Yeah, and if you're just lying to the other player, it's also fun when you succeed. So
yeah,
it's great.
You feel like a fucking puppet master, mastermind, evil genius, bastard. Yeah. Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
I am the magic. I am the arcane wizard of this place.
For that alone, I think Moonstone... That's
great.
Also sure. Like, there's
that. Moonstone! So, you want to introduce the next nomination?
So the next nomination category is best JC Dent experience. As we all know, our fellow co-host loves his army building to the detriment of any other part of the review, and will rush to it as quickly as he can. So now we're going to discuss what game implements army building the best. It's Moonstone.
Moonstone is good. It's a strong contender because it's the simplest we had.
Yeah, four to six favorite guys, and just go. No penalties, no stress. Just find synergies and just have fun.
Yeah, that's it. Like you choose a faction, you choose four guys. I think, but there might be more. In some versions, I think it depends on how many players you have, but it's just like that's it. That's all the limitations. Like same faction, no duplicates.
And even the same factions being broadened because you can have split faction units as well. So, it's only getting more interesting. It's only getting cooler.
Like you don't have you like some like other games we played. Like you don't have to think too much in Techno Bowl. You don't really think. I mean, you could think when choosing a team. I didn't. I just chose the one that had cats on the cover or something. In Eagle's Empire, you don't even build an army before you play. And then you get into Moonstone and it says like, well, take a handful of goblins. That's your army. Of course, you are still compelled to choose characters that synergize, and some guys synergize better than others. But other than that, I think it's really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The only other game I saw that had like army building, to my mind, as interesting was Rogue Planet, once again, because it ties into the HP energy system so immediately. And the light, medium, heavy thing was interesting choices without being like overbearing. But it's not as interesting as Brunson as being like, hey, what are your favorite sculpts? Take them. You can just always take them. You can always have your favorite big boy on the board and never have to be like, oh, I really want to bring two Hack Tower, but I've only got 50 points left rather than 110. So now I'm going to get myself or like just take all the toys and forget any specialists like I always did in Infinity. Now it's like, nah, fuck that. Fuck that. All of you guys rule. All of you guys are cool. And as long as you're going to get some bullshit Joan of Arc person across the board just deletes your guys immediately, that feels good. But it works if you fire a cannibal at them, and that feels good as well. So, what's to say?
I was going to nominate Sinnoh's Rampant because it's the rule set with army building so cool. I wrote a damn setting book, the field guide.
Neat demonstrations of it as well. Just like constantly telling you and reinforcing how to build cool armies and cool factions and cool setups and like how these changes matter and how every option, well, most of the options make for a different kind of vibe entirely. And I just love the book is full of just pictures of like, hey, here's my army. Here's what it does. Here's how I built it. Rather than being like, yes, and here is my combined army of dudes. Like, what do they do? I had like six different things each, so don't worry. Also, I'm not trying to rag on Infinity. It's just on my mind a lot, like, I've been thinking about getting back into it. Yeah, I know.
Infinity is never far from our... It's never far from our mind. I keep painting those O12 miniatures when I sit down to paint. I think I've spent more time painting them this year than actually playing them in the last few years. But Sinnoh's Rampant, at some point you have to ask whether it has good army building or whether it sells the army building so well, because it has several settings and then demonstration armies built for them with scintillating bits of fluff scattered everywhere. Yeah. And you're like, have you ever considered that an army of rednecks that are worshipping some sort of horror would be written interestingly when you have like a sentence for the army and then only the unit names to work with? Surprisingly so, yes. I've never seen army building be such an achievement in narrative building.
Yeah, it's like, and the whole book is just full of that, hey, here's this two-sentence explanation of, like, why this guy's cool. Like, yeah, they are cool, yeah!
Yeah.
Like, yeah, and honestly, nothing else this year has really grabbed me, building-wise. So, AT-43 was interesting in a lot of ways in how you build armies, because you're building, like, platoons of guys, and the reinforcement stuff was interesting.
But also we would have died if my friend hadn't had an army builder stash somewhere.
If I'd had to pen and paper that shit, we would not have got past turn one or got to turn one. Like it's extremely neat, extremely cool. I can see why it's kind of an evolutionary cul-de-sac, but I think it could be revisited in a way that makes for really interesting gameplay.
Mostly people demand more balance and, unless you're a certain 40-year-old company that's biggest in the world of miniature gaming, you can probably do balance.
Yeah, but Rogue Trader had a really weird army building. Like, just shout out to Rogue Trader for being insane. Just absolutely. Yeah.
A game that can't decide whether it wants to be an RPG or a miniature war game and decides to go kind of with both. but also not at the same time. And there's also absolute lack of any sort of uniformity or editing finesse. It's just like, oh man, just flail at the page until it fills out and then we can ship it with some cool art.
Yeah.
So, best army building, Moonstone?
Probably.
Yeah, because like, no matter how inspiring Xenos Rampant is, you still have to sit down, think, write stuff. And Moonstone is like, these four guys, they're coming with me and you're liable to have a good time.
Yeah, it's unless you intentionally pick things that don't have any relation to each other. Like if you buy the pirate box and run the pirate box, they all work well together immediately. But if you go like, I buy four different boxes for individual models, it might not feel as good, but that is you actively resisting the game and what it's trying to teach you and tell you. So it's like, well, you've made these choices.
Yeah. You made this list not work, and it doesn't work. Congratulations, you achieved your goal.
You sure broke it. Good job.
So the next one is very painful for Australians all around here. Best excuses to buy miniatures, since they get their miniatures at 300% markup and 5 years later than everyone else.
What do you mean? I can't wait to spend $300 buying the Worms board game. It's so exciting for me.
For this, my nominee is Dread Knights, because it's late 19th century and you have an excuse to buy steampunk, well, not necessarily steampunky, but also the steampunky miniatures, and you can kit bash some stuff that might not be as excessively grim as like Dark 28 likes it to be. But you can also, I guess, go with the Blanchitsu route. It's your gang of poor bastards going into that mutating smog knight and fighting it out with vampires. And again, if you want to go on the more maybe professional route, Perrys have plastic British for like Sudan and Afghanistan. And like they say, you don't necessarily have to put it in London. The game doesn't even call the city London. You can easily refluff it to run it anywhere. I feel like late 19th century miniatures is kind of an not underserved market, but underserved setting, because 19th century is usually dominated by Napoleon going buck wild in Europe, and then Americans deciding whether they want to die for slavery or to abolish slavery. Some of those choices were better than others. I have Dread, and also Dread Knights is full of good art, which suggests you could make some character full of vampires. Do you want your vampires to be all dramatic and sexy like Lestat or something, or do you want them to be more like the Nosferatu clan? There's also a place for werewolf. I think it's generally a good fit.
Yeah, I guess I'll just have to look into their model lineup, because they get that they partner with some people to do stuff. And like, there's a bunch of cool gothic horror things poking around. I know. I've thought this was a tough category, because like having lost my job again, looking at miniatures to buy them is kind of a bummer. It's like, can't afford them, and like even Carnival sort of like, oh, a bit much nowadays. But it's not. It's just my priorities have shifted once again. I honestly, it's a lot of Moonstone. But Moonstone gives you those amazing standees as well, so you don't have to buy Moonstone minis. Everything to play Moonstone is almost free, except for the D4s. Like, it's bonkers. Yeah. I think the one that grabbed me the most would be, like, the Doomed, because every monster would be such a fun, like, kitbashing project. They're all, like, kind of weird. All the horrors and stuff would be, like, need to do that. I thought
I was thinking about it today, because there are like 36 monsters.
Yeah,
but they're not just monsters. You have to also build the nexuses and the minions and stuff.
Yeah.
So it would be an amazing miniature building project. Like, if you and your friend had huge piles of convertible miniatures, and like you said, like, hey, we're playing a game this week we roll this monster and you're going to assemble and paint it, and next week we're going to do that. Well, maybe space it out by 2 weeks to be more realistic. But and at the end of it, if you played all that 36 monsters, which is insane if you managed it, you'd have a collection of a lot of weird gribbly monsters, hopefully painted in a similar style and going towards the same direction. And that's not all, even all the monsters, because you'd have more of them in the if the campaign goes bad. So as far as miniature inspiration, you have nailed it on the head. Yeah,
like I definitely think that Dread Knights would be arguably a simpler project.
Yes.
Because a lot of the tropes that it's playing with are much more, like, not to say they're mundane, but they are more common. They're more like
ready off the shelf.
Yeah, you can like find a bunch of Gothic horror stuff everywhere for whatever reason. But if you wanted to really get into Doomed, if you were like, fucking love these monsters, you have complete free creative encouragement to do anything you want, really. In a way that most of these other games are sort of like, you can do anything you want as long as you buy these boxes.
Yeah.
Like, you can convert stuff to 7TV, but it also has very clear, like, they're selling stuff for it, which all looks pretty good. The dude was like, nah, man, just fucking make a cyclone of horror. Like, okay, sure.
Let's go. The way they describe their monsters and setting, we talked about it in the review. It's not very interesting. It's not as evocative as what Xenos Rampant did. But there's enough of a kernel there that you know which direction to go. And by itself, the 36 plus monster project would be a fun thing to do.
Yeah, and like even MJ13 kind of fell down there, in my opinion. Because the monsters are sort of like didn't grab me the same way.
Oh no, the monsters in that one were even even weaker as far as inspiration goes than in Doomed. But I guess the interesting thing here is the excuse to build big Griblies. Because usually when we talk about games and buying miniatures, I guess we talk about 28mm dude-like dudes, and this is specifically not that.
Yeah, it's neat. It's definitely something to encourage people to look at. Just, yeah.
So what's your final nominee? I think you gave us a whole
smorgasbord. I'd say Doomed. It's just like, because you can buy whatever minis and then build them up. And that's always really encouraging to me for like a guy who likes having a broad collection of shit.
Yeah, I guess I'm going to go with Doomed because it's a very unique angle, and I actually thought about it like today because some backstage fun stuff. Today I'm posting the blog post for the review as a tie-in, and like you know I had the reason to think about the game again. Because I usually didn't think about it, and I came up with this idea, like it would be cool to have all the monsters. So yeah, I'm going to give it to Doomed.
Absolutely!
Hooray to Doomed for best excuses to buy miniatures. Clappity clappity.
Best mechanics to tear out and play in a better game.
Yes. Yeah. You want to do games that changed our opinion during the review the most, which is...
That seems like what's next.
Usually when that happens, I think the most impressive examples that we remember is like how we get excited more about a good game. Like, I think it happened with Rampant. I think we...
Mm-hmm.
Now what? I'll go against my original plan, and I'm going to say Rogue Planet because I wasn't that excited while reading it. I was only a little excited about it when doing it, and then when we played it, and then when we talked about it, I think I got the biggest amplitude of being like, this game has good ideas. And yeah, that game has good ideas because sometimes you have to not only voice the opinion to yourself, but also let it fly and have bounce out of another person you respect. And yeah, Rogue Planet has a lot of design decisions going for it.
And it's also that thing you do where you talk to your friends about something you're both excited about, and you both like start feedback looping about like, yeah. Like walking out of a movie theater and being like, oh, it's all right. And sort of, that's it. We sort of like, I think I like that. Yeah, I think I like it too. I think I love that. Like, yeah.
And it's also a lot more fun to get gradually more and more excited about the thing than gradually understand that you don't like the thing.
Yeah, like I definitely had that experience with Water Tanker and being like, so keen for this cool Lighty's Tank game and being like, fuck yeah. Busting him out. I played some real life games with Doug. And this is like, oh.
Yeah, you guys can't really appreciate it from the way he says it, but he had been advocating for What a Tanker for like 3 months at this point. So as you imagine, the disappointment is real.
It was one of the first games we had on our list of games to cover too. Yeah, just like, hey, this is fun. Everyone I talked to was always like, yeah, it's so neat. It does this and that and this and that. I'm like, well, okay, it must be good. And like,
when you play a game and you start thinking somewhat favorable thoughts about the World of Tanks tank game as a result, it's not a good thing.
What a strange feeling.
Yeah,
Rogue Planet, we definitely talked ourselves into loving, and then Techno Bowl, we were both just sort of like, yeah, immediately. I think the similar thing with Dread Knights as well, like, I definitely feel like I got stronger feelings about that game as we sort of kept going with it.
It has a lot to recommend itself. There's variety, there's good gameplay decisions.
Chekhov's gun.
Man, I love all the nonsense with the apothecary, or that, your dude died, well, give him 5 XP and he can return with another flaw because dying is somewhat traumatic. Or like if you're ahead and you have money, you can go to the apothecary and say, yes, please, I want this guy to be immortal. I want to not care about it anymore. I love him too much. And that's the thing allowed in the rules. I don't think you even have to roll for it. It's like, because nobody will ever forget having to make all those surgeon, apothecary, whatever roles in Necromund.
Yeah, like, no one enjoys those, I don't think. So it's just being like, fuck it.
My guy is wounded, but now I can spend the money to see if he will remain wounded or die.
Or I can buy him back some special gear that just gets him to baseline. How fun!
Bionics not giving you any sort of benefits, but just being a tax on your regular performance is probably the worst rule idea out of Dungeons & Dragons Magic.
Yeah, I think changed in the bad way about it was probably MJ13, which may have been too harsh in the game in the review. But once I realized that like you're being cloned and it's not how cloning works, I was just like, man, there are trap choices in this game, and I hate trap choices. Like,
yeah, MJ13 was one of those games that I had been, I don't know, obsessed for a long time. I was waiting and ready to get it. It's like, you know, the Snarling Badger is still do a good job, and I was like a neat concept, I guess. And I was waiting and I was trying to get it, and then you read it and then you play it and then you're like, oh man. I even made those fun standees for TTS, and that was more fun than playing it. And you mentioned, trap choices, the right choices, the fact that when buying base upgrades, you definitely have the one right choice you have to buy immediately. It ain't great.
Yeah, and this, like, I still laugh at the idea of, like, your super tough Black Ops soldier loses an arm, so you clone him. Arm's gonna go, baby! Get out that chainsaw!
We have to get visibility in this.
We cannot retire you, I'm sorry. We're very strong proponents of the Markian inheritance. Yes. So, this is how it be.
So, Rogue Planet?
I 100%.
Rogue Planet, the game that changed our opinion the most. Woo!
Yeah!
Congrats!
Congrats. Now it's time for the category I basically crowbarred into this because it's not a part of the show. I called it the game we still think about. And wait, or was that your category?
I think it was yours.
No. I think this one you suggested and I liked. I liked it so much that I did the whole. This,
yeah.
It's mine now. Comic about it, and the game I think about these days still is Moonstone. Those dang melee shooting mechanics are so good that I think about hacking it into mini RPGs. Like everybody knows I love Space Marines. Some people know that I hate the FFG 40K games because they're not great. And I keep thinking that Moonstone rules would make for like a suitable-ish RPG combat engine, and like how it would be fun to play. Like, yeah, I'm playing Death Watch, but with Moonstone rules, the magic would serve well for unpredictably of warp magic. Don't know if it would fit shooting so well, but melee mechanics would be even better because. Usually in FFG and stuff, it's like, hey, I run at the enemy with my optimally chosen weapon, and I do a bajillion attacks, and I don't even have to roll for damage because I have system mastery, and I stack damage modifiers so high that the variable part doesn't even matter. So,
yeah, I'm going to roll my D6 plus something, your D6 plus something, then we roll those results again, and then the winner gets to pick their favorite threes, and on Christmas, Lunar, New Year, we get to try and divide it by two, but also you're sitting in the left of my right, so like, I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care.
I think it could be adapted into a mini RPG easily. Maybe I'll do it sometimes.
An RPG would be so easy. It's so fun.
Yes, it would be the best Space Marine RPG after Nice Marines.
100%.
So what game do you still think about?
Out of this list? Honestly, because Brent Spivey sent that big box of like Technical stuff, it's just going to be that. I'm going to play that again. I want to play that. I would think about Moonstone a lot. I want to keep playing Moonstone. I want it too for a big time. But engaging with the creators on Twitter and emailing them, being like, do you have anyone on this side of the world or near this side of the world that stocks it? And being like, no. I'm like, fuck. So, and the standees are cool. Like I said, standees are fine. I love playing standees. It's just sort of like a kid or two would be nice to have. But also, it is what it is.
Yeah, considering how characterful the miniatures are, they really are something like they're a bit cartoonish and stuff, but it even as a painting project it would be interesting. Yeah. So
yeah, I definitely don't fuck with all the Moonstone minis, but like there are some sick ones. Like the Pipe Goblins for starters immediately.
Just buy the Empire miniatures and you have a starting party for your Warhammer Fantasy roleplay.
Absolutely. Yeah, otherwise probably like Dreadnoughts would be neat. Same three games over and over.
Well, what can I say? So some of those games are very good, and I can't really say that I thought about, say, Punk Apocalyptic much after we played it.
I completely forgot we covered Thud and Blunder until it came up back on the list. I remember being positive about it. I remember being like, okay. Yeah.
It was an okay/good game, but somehow didn't leave any lasting impression.
And that's also it being a fantasy game, and I just trying to ask it uphill, motherfucker. It's not gonna work for you.
Yeah, but meanwhile, Moonstone is like, hey,
we'll
combat maneuvers, guy. And you're like, yes, that's good. So does Moonstone win again?
I can't keep winning everything.
Yeah.
Unless.
Well, so the game that we think about, we still think about these days, it's Moonstone. And now it's the ultimate part of the niches, and the it's usually the segment is the ultimate part of the show. The game we'd play again, and I'm most likely to say Xeno's Rampant, because while it doesn't have the morale mechanics I'd want, it's as a mass combat game that could be used for, say, 40k purposes, I think I like it more than I like Grimdark Future. And push comes to shove, I'd play it more, even though it's not, it doesn't have that same, say, cultural mental cachet of being an acceptable 40k alternative quite the same way as Grimdark Future is, because it's literally a replacement for that. But yeah, I think I'd play Xeno's Rampant again.
Yeah, I definitely enjoyed it and would look into it if they had more time. This Rampant is sick. Definitely play that. But I think Techno Balls would be the next one, the most likely to come up, because once I get to the printer, get to Office Works and get some stuff printed, done.
And, you know, if you're hankering for, like, fantasy football, it's not too hard to, I guess, print those cubes to be elves and orcs.
Yeah, just run you through Blood Bowl minis that I'm sure everyone listening to has, except for me, because it never became an option.
So, this was short. So, are we unanimously declaring Xeno's Rampant, or are your feelings on Techno Bowl stronger?
Oh, man. I fucking love Techno Bowl. Techno Bowl is so cool. It's so neat. It's so interesting.
It's a tie between Rampant and Techno Bowl.
Woohoo! well played to everyone who turned up. The only real loser was people who didn't try to compete. And frankly, you should feel ashamed of yourselves. Like everyone else that we've talked to and discussed this year, like every game I think has something you can learn from just by reading it or looking at it or playing it. I don't think we've encountered any truly bad games, except maybe Punk Apocalyptic's weird Hitler faction, which is weird vibe. It's also like that's punk. It's punk as fuck to dress up like Nazis because it's like, you know, anti everything, and that's sort of punk.
That's why the bikers liked Nazi aesthetic so much.
I'm keen to check out the new editions of 7TV because I think they fixed a lot of the issues we had with it. What a cowboy's representation of what a tanker seems neat. It has like objectives and stuff. And like MD13 and the Doomed are both games that we think, or I think, have strong bones that are just let down by not being what I want them to be, or being a pale imitation of other things. Like MJ13 is kind of just like, what if you only had a D&D boss fight and you controlled everyone? Like, that sucks.
Space Station, I think, suffers a lot from balance because as you remember, you can build a band of four space marines and they'll demolish everything, or you can take 8 alien grunts and they died immediately from the EOE effect that keeps going on every turn. And now and you can't even replenish your numbers. You have to go.
Yeah, the horrible fucking death spiral. It's just immediate. Even your four ultra badasses, like once one of them gets hit, that's it. Like,
yeah.
And like Bella Ludian and Eagles of Empire, both games that seem just super neat. Super fucking, like Bella Ludi is like a workplace fucking
team building tool.
Yeah, team building tool is like such a cool idea, and it's wild to think that can be some people's like first introduction to war games. It's just like, I love that. I love that so much. And Eagles of Empire was neat. We just had problems with it, like that we're discussing about. Like, just like, hey, how do I win this scenario?
Yeah, and also a lot of Eagles of Empire problems would be resolved by just going over the rule book and making some things
just playing it more. Like, I'm sure that would help a lot.
Well, you know, we talked a lot about how scenario generation doesn't tell you like which troopers are available for which. But yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, like I said, like nothing. Like, we don't cover bad games. None of our games ever. It's sort of like, this is never a shit game. No one should ever think about this. It's like, oh, you know, this is going to grab someone, and it's going to be sick when it grabs them super hard. Like, it's so...
I have a bad game on the plate for maybe next April 1st special episode. I don't know if it's entirely bad mechanically, but it's... it's something. It's going to be something.
I don't know the one you mean.
Don't if you want to ask me about it, to do it off air. But yeah, there are too many games coming out for us to like go after famously bad games, and I don't know if bad miniature war games have the same interest or like bad RPG games have.
I don't really personally, to me, like Heartbreakers don't interest me. Like, they all have like one cool thing, but otherwise it's just functionally the same thing. And if I listen to podcasts about miniature games, I'd rather be like, what do you think this game is, like A, B, C, and D, and this hopefully one of these three things grabs you. Like, I'd be like, yeah, that's shit on this person's hard work. Ha ha. They think you can have infinite movement. What an asshole. I'd be like, it's kind of like an interesting way to do this. Is kind of like the thoughts.
Yeah.
Funked here. Like, and like, I don't want to play bad games. I'm not here to play bad games. That sounds like a fucking shitty time.
Despite what people might think of from my online presence and stuff, I actually want games to be good, and I enjoy it when the games are good. And well, every game we take, we usually take because it's an interesting game, or shameful to admit, there's a bit of recentism in play, and you're like, hey, if reviewing this new game is gonna get major listens. And none of these are chosen because, like, yeah, we can go shit on it. I want to read a bad rule book.
Yeah, because, like, we haven't got much time for games, and thinking that we're gonna have a bad experience in any regard is just like, nah.
Yeah, we're aiming for the best experiences we can see and consider, and we also take fan suggestions into account. And yeah, we'll see if you ping us more, maybe you'll see Grunts reviewed before 2024.
I'm deleting all those pings before Dent season. Confidently, no, you have no chance.
But you bought the army builder.
It's true. It's true. I did.
Another game, like, that would kill you without an army builder.
Oh man,
yeah.
Looking at that again. And like, we get people reaching out to us, and it's super sick. It's so cool. People, yes, like, hey, check out my game. And like, fuck yeah, I'll check out your game. That's
awesome. I think Rogue Planet was one of those games where we definitely played because somebody said like, hey, look into Rogue Planet, and. Don't we know a person on Discord that told us to do Moonstone?
Yeah, thanks, Molly.
Yeah, thanks, Molly. It's your episode through and through.
there's your shout out finally.
He's now pestering us to do Rune Blade, or Rune Sword, or however it's called.
Runestone?
No, I think it's Runestone is the dead game, right?
I thought it died. I honestly thought, I'm probably wrong, but like, I'm sure someone in the group, one of the group was like, hey, this isn't alive anymore. Relic Blade, yeah.
Yeah, Relic Blade. I think Relic Blade is the less dead game because it's an indie game. Runestone, I think, was the FFG sort of Warcraft 3 game with orders given as you do it in X-Wing, and it's super dead. It's it's as dead as a game can be.
Okay. Like I said, I'm wrong about things all the time, including my opinions on this podcast. So I'll just have a.
I'm not. If I was wrong, I wouldn't have a podcast.
People didn't hear how right I am.
Yes.
Oh, it's still Warhammer.
Yeah. That's it. This has been a year of good games. This has been a year of good listeners. Game. Yes. And thank you all for tuning in again and again. And also reading the blog times. I think at least one guy said that he doesn't listen to the podcast, but reads the blog reviews. And I'm like, I guess.
He's right. He's right to do it.
I mean, yes. Right. Well, when you read the blog, you don't have to listen to my voice. So, you know.
Yeah. And like, shout out to Fear the Squirrels and Justin, our Patreons, patrons. Appreciate it immensely. Your work helps make everything go forward. And by that I mean my patrons, my Patreons.
Yes.
But yeah, like it's so cool to see anyone liking, subscribing, supporting, commenting, messaging us. Like it's really cool. And like devs reaching out as well. It's feels really rewarding. Like, hey.
And the devs coming on to do interviews, it's also very cool. It's literally some of the most exciting thing we've done here, because like, you know, listening to guys like Brent or Ivan or the Pulpally guy, I keep forgetting the name of.
Yeah.
He was so cool. It's like, you know, it's like, yeah, you're doing it, man. You're saying some of the good, insightful stuff.
People just are free with their time and energy nowadays, and it's just so cool. And as always, like, we're always open to suggestions and stuff. We always try to have people tell us cool shit, because we can't keep track of everything. It's really hard to keep track of most things.
Yeah.
And it's just so awesome whenever someone's like, hey, check out blah, 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 or look at this. And David Phipps did Pop Alley.
Yeah. I think that was my first interview for the podcast, and it went swimmingly well.
Yeah, especially the bit at the start. We tried to record.
So you know, if you have an interesting game in mind, and if you have an interesting old game in mind that you also have the army builder for, ping us.
Yeah. We love complex games. We don't like building Excel spreadsheets.
Yes. And I guess with that, I'll be signing off. I hope we'll all meet in the Niches 2024. And this has been, for the last few years, JC Dent, accompanied by incomparable, irreplaceable, irrefutable, maybe? Casa.
Woo.
Talk at you next year.
Bye.
Bye.